Oh, snaps.
The world is finally waking up to the crap that's baked into and sprayed on kibble dog food. No longer can commercial pet food manufacturers fool us with pretty pictures and false promises. This is the raw dog food truth. The view and opinions expressed on this podcast are not intended to replace medical advice. Before starting any raw diet, do research, ask lots of questions, and consult your vet.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Dee Dee Mercer Moffitt, the CEO of Raw Dog Food and Company, where your pet's health is our business and we're friends. Don't let friends feed kibble. And Dr. Jacek, you know what? I think we should start a new slogan. Friends, don't let friends double and triple up their friggin' mask. I mean, if you care that your friend is breathing, come on. What is going on? Now we're doubling and tripling up the mask. I saw this. The CDC is now saying, don't wear that N95 mask. No. We don't suggest you wear the N95. No, we suggest that you wear two and three masks together. I can't breathe in one mask. Why would I put three on?
It's ridiculous. And it would be like so uncomfortable. And I, you know, how do you get them to stay on? And yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Like what's the, I always get suspicious anymore. Like, so what's the alternative agenda? Like we can't see each other. Now we can't even talk to each other. Cause if you've ever tried to talk to somebody that's got more than one mask on, their voices are so muffled, you can't even understand them. Maybe that's the next step. We're not going to be able to talk to each other with masks on either.
I think that's the thing. You know, they there's a certain agenda. You're only supposed to talk about one thing. And so maybe we're just not supposed to talk. But and the bacterial pneumonia and the teeth disease and the tooth decay, that's coming.
Yeah, it's unnatural. I mean, anytime you do anything unnatural, it's going to have effects on the body. And then I ask the question, is it necessary? You know, are they even doing any good? I mean, most people that I see are like relieved when I tell them they don't have to wear a mask. They're like, oh, thank God, because they just hate these things, you know? And I don't think they're even necessary. I don't think they're, you know, I don't think they're helping anything at all, except making it harder to see people's faces and now harder to even understand them.
Well, you know what else is coming? If you think that this is crazy, I hear that China, I saw a report, now they're pushing for, wait for it, anal swabs.
What's the ulterior motive there?
Hang on, drop your pants. We've got to get your anal swab. What? Well, I don't even get that. It makes no sense to me.
I don't get that either. The world just keeps getting crazier.
It does keep getting crazier. So we are going to try to bring you some sense to your dog's life. And speaking of anal swabs, we are going to be talking about yearly exams and specifically fecal exams or fecal test as dogs go in, because sometimes these can be confusing, convoluted, and just incorrect. But you know what, Dr. Jacek, I was reading about, you know, annual exams for dogs. So there's some question as whether, you know, your annual checkup, is it really necessary? And what I found, and I have asked the same question of our daughter, who is a vet, why does this, you know, annual thing come about? Why? Well, because it's a good way to get your dogs coming in, get their shots, get this medication, that medication. But there is some research that says, you know, the annual veterinary visit typically results in just revaccination and toxic chemicals like heartworm, flea and tick, and all of that kind of stuff going into your dog. So there's some people who say maybe you don't want to go in every year. Yeah. What say
well,
you?
Well, I'll tell you, when I have learned that, so you go to a like a business management, practice management type talk on veterinary medicine. And it's a business model, really. It's not a health model. It's a business model. And, oh, and a lot of clinics, you know, will recommend twice a year or even quarterly because it just brings people in the door. It's profit driven. So they'll come up with a reason for it. Like, well, you know, your dog, I've heard all this stuff. Like this is based on the business model. You know, well, your dog ages, you know, like 7 years from one of our years. So going in twice a year is like one of us going in every 3 years or something like that. So it's a way to get people in the door. It really is. It's like I said, it's a business model. And then if they are doing the vaccines and the flea and tick and the heartworm and all of these toxic preventatives that I don't ever recommend, then it's just a way to make sure, oh, well, look, you know, your dog's due for lepto, due for Bordetella. I see this in my cancer patients. They'll go in, they'll get the notice from their vet, their regular conventional vet. They'll go in, oh, dog's due for lepto, better give it. And some people are saying, you know, they're not even being asked. And especially these days where you can't go in with your pet, people are saying like, they're not being given a choice. They're just said your pet needs their vaccines. I talked to a client the other day who's like 15-year-old cat, you know, got a rabies shot. And she said they like said it didn't even ask me. They just told me that that's what they were doing. And now, you know, I think people need to be a little more animate about, no, you don't do anything to my pet without my authorization, but that's ridiculous.
I would be so mad. You have not seen wrath like that. If somebody took my dog, did something without my permission, I have no problem getting in their face. That's ridiculous.
Well, and it's actually against the Practice Act. I mean, if you look up the Veterinary Practice Act in Colorado, veterinarians are supposed to practice informed consent. It's written right there. They're not supposed to do things without fully educating and getting full consent, you know, from the pet parent. And that, I know it's not happening. And it makes a lot of people nervous. I think that's one of the reasons I just keep getting busier and busier because people come in with their pets and they're like, this is so nice. I get to actually come in and have a conversation. And I feel like I can do my work better because that conversation with the pet parent and their interaction with the pet, the whole dynamic is very informative for me as far as what's going on, you know, with the pet. And it gives me a lot of clues because I can ask questions during that conversation. Things come up and you can ask questions. This just drop them off at the curb and, you know, deciding what the pet needs without, you know, even conversing with the owner. It's not only do they do things that are not authorized, I think it's just bad medicine. And I do see pets just misdiagnosed all the time because they're just not being thorough. They're not having that, that conversation. I think it's so important. I think the pets are suffering because of it.
Well, I think it's a telltale sign for you if you have customers or patients who come in with full body condoms on, you know which way the conversation needs to go, right? So I think that it's very important that we see people face to face. All right.
So I think so. I think so too. And I respect people's choices, but I am not moving my practice outside. If people are not comfortable coming in, then they'll just have to find care elsewhere.
You know, there comes a point, Dr. Jasek, when you have your own business, right? Like I do, like you do, that you have to draw a line in the sand and say, so, you know, we want to be helpful. Certainly we want to give people a choice. We want freedom of decision. But when it gets ridiculous, sometimes you have to draw a line in the sand and say, I'm not going to be able to help you. I'm sorry.
Right. And I refuse to live in fear. I mean, I believe in being educated. I like to know what's going on. You know, there's some pretty horrific stuff potentially going on in the world right now. So I like to be informed. But then I go on with, okay, what can I do in this world, you know, to make a difference and to do something positive moving forward. So I'm just not interested in sitting in fear or being around people that are that afraid of everything in life, because you know what, it affects the pets too. You know, when people are so anxious and so afraid of everything in the world, the pets pick up on that too. They know. And then the pets get afraid and they get sicker. Those pets just don't do as well, because people that are that worried, they're also, you know, worried about their pets. And if they just, you know, even with, you know, pets with cancer, if you just sit in fear all the time and every time you see your pet, you're just so afraid, I can guarantee that condition's going to get worse. People that believe that they can, you know, manage their pet's condition and, you know, they think positively and they're working on creating a good quality of life for their pet, those pets do so much better. They so pick up on our energy, I think, so much more than we realize. So if you're living in fear, you are actually having an adverse effect on your pet's life.
Well, I can't imagine, because I know how I feel right in the world today. And I think that if you're a sheeple and you just have your head down and you go about your business, you're probably in less fear than those who are more informed. And that's unfortunate, but that is the case. I just always am thinking, how much cortisol is going into my body every single day? And what's the damage that's happening, right? Because of that fear, because of that anxiousness, because of knowing maybe what's coming. Cortisol is a killer, don't you think? Too much cortisol? Oh,
yeah, it's stress. Stress is a huge killer because of the side effects. It keeps you in that sympathetic fight or flight mode. And in order for your body to be healthy and heal, and this is the same for our pets as it is for us, you have to get in that parasympathetic mode. And yeah, you can't do that when your adrenals are in overdrive, pumping out all that cortisol. You gotta find a way to chill out, man.
Yeah. We probably should do a webinar on that at some point.
And chilling out.
Oh, chilling out. Yeah. Well, two sides of that. Being informed, how to be informed, right? To see the train wreck that is coming. And how do you stay calm, right? Because there are some things that are coming, some things that are happening that are frightening. Right. So what do you do about that? How do you take a stand? How do you not just lay down and, you know,
Well, I think people, I know for me, it helps to be proactive. So I think, okay, that, you know, there's some stuff coming down that could get pretty nasty. Well, what can I do to prepare? Like, what can you do something about? And what can you not do anything about? Things that are coming down the pike, we're probably not going to be able to do anything about a lot of that, but how can you get prepared so that you can stay safer and, you know, keep yourself healthy? And you got to think for yourself. If you think that, you know, if you're the mindset that you just want to be taken care of and you think, you know, the government is going to provide for you and take care of you, which is what I think they would like people to believe, I think you're going to be sadly mistaken. You know, you got to be proactive and think for yourself. And that's what helps me is, you know, what can I do? I mean, you look at the stuff you can change and the stuff you can't change and the stuff I can change. Well, what can I do to prepare the best I can? And the stuff you can't change, you can't just sit around and worry about it either. It's good to be informed, but then, okay, I know this is going on. There's not really a lot I can do about it. So I think that distinction, I find to be helpful.
Well, and I do think that we also make choices based on what we ultimately want to do, right? So for instance, we talk about dogs that are sick, and we can give our recommendations. We can say, drop this treat, drop these processed foods, get on a raw diet, use ozone therapy, buy a machine, take it home. But if your mindset is, I don't want to spend that kind of money, I don't want to have to go through those steps, then I think you can justify your actions and not do anything, right? So it all depends on really, what do you want to do? Do you want to take control of a situation or do you not? Because I do think that what you said is true. You can get proactive in so many different ways where you have no power, where I think it is extremely depressing, is when you take one person's piece of advice and you just don't do anything else with it. Right. So if you go to the vet, let's say this, you go to the vet and the vet says, your dog has cancer. And you say, well, there's nothing I could do. They're going to die. And you do nothing about it. That's pretty devastating, you know, or you don't change their diet or you don't change certain things. You can change some things. Do you ever see a situation, Dr. Jasek, where there's just absolutely zero you can do? Zero, nothing.
You know, I would say no. I would say there's always something we can do. Now, I do occasionally see some cancer patients that are pretty advanced that I think, I don't know how much success we're going to have, especially if the dogs have quit eating. If once the appetite completely goes, that's a almost like certain sort of, you know, sign that things are getting towards end stage. However, you know, I have worked with those pets and sometimes I just give them a couple of days of a better quality of life. You know, we'll talk about feeding them, you know, some things. Maybe they're just scrambling them up eggs or doing something, you know, something different, perking them up a little bit, improving their energy. And I can honestly say that it's really, really, really rare that I can't improve the pet's quality of life for some period of time. And in most cases, it's not days, it's months, you know, sometimes years. I can improve pet's quality of life. But the thing I hear from the conventional side when people come in, and the people that come into me, they're not wanting to do chemo. They don't want to do radiation. They want to do something different. And they're being told, well, then you're just taking your pet home to die. That's what the conventional vets say. Well, if you're not going to do surgery or radiation or chemotherapy, then just take your pet home and it'll be dead in a month. And I hear that all the time. And I feel like there's always something we can do to help, even if it is just for a short period of time. And most of the time goes way beyond the, you know, predictions of conventional medicine because they don't have other options. You don't do chemo or radiation or surgery. They don't know what to do. They don't even know that changing the diet will help. You know, they don't even talk to people about that, but just getting them on a fresh food diet and making some, you know, simple changes in the lifestyle, doing some essential oils. There's just some real simple, gentle things that we can do that'll help, you know, improve the quality of life for, you know, some period of time. And usually it's a pretty good period of time.
I thought about you this week. My neighbors were walking by with their dog and he had all these like patches. Like I was like, his tail was wrapped up at the top and he had all these like patches of hair gone. And I was like, what? And this is a black dog, right? So I can clearly see. I said, what in the world happened? Because I'm thinking, oh, got mountain lion. Something happened. You know, this dog got attacked. They said, no, he just had a bunch of lumps and bumps and we had them all taken off. I was like, oh my gosh. Okay. I kept my mouth shut. I'm just going to say that. I kept my mouth shut. I don't believe in telling people that their kids are ugly or fat. So I don't believe that you would tell them about that to their dog. But I thought, what vet advised you to take all of those off of your dog? Right? For no reason. Yeah. It's just because they're there.
It is for no reason, except to make money for the vet. I hesitate to say that, but you know what? It's a sad state of the profession, but with all the corporatization, the clinics are profit driven and vets are, you know, a lot of them are paid percentages of what they produce, meaning what they sell. So the more things they sell, the more their income goes up. And, you know, and they're also trained to you know, believe that that's is actually good for the pet. I mean, there is some medical justification, but you know, my approach to medicine more and more is becoming that less is more, you know, that we don't need to keep doing things. We need to support the pet and support their own healing ability. And I think we just get so much further that way, but it takes some, you know, takes some patience. It takes some diligence, and it takes doing less. And I think there's this, you know, knee-jerk reaction. Well, you want to do more. I want to do more. There's this lump there. I just want to remove it so that it's gone, but that's not treating anything. You know, you can make all those lumps go away. Well, if you're not treating what caused the lumps in the first place, guess what? They're going to come back, or they're going to get new ones, because you're not addressing the underlying issues. They're gone for a period of time. And I've seen this so many times where dogs get surgery, get all these lumps taken off. And if they're malignancies, they grow back. And when they grow back, it's with a vengeance. It's with a vengeance. I've seen it so many times. And they just do so much better when we quit putting them through stressful procedures and giving them all kinds of unnecessary medications and just supporting the body. It seems so simple to me, but it's just so foreign to, seems like, the whole rest of the profession.
Right. Well, let's talk about poop.
All right.
Let's talk about anal
swabs. Anal swabs.
That I've got to hear more about. The Chinese are pushing for anal swabs. Okay.
I got to hear the justification for that one.
Well, what I want to know, is that going to be a drive-by? Is that going to be a drive-by? Okay. Right. Okay. So fecal exams, this is a part of, you know, say a dog goes in for just, you know, checkup, and they do a fecal. And recently, you know, I had a customer who they did a fecal, and the vets found something, and then they were concerned. But I said, how was the dog presenting for this, you know, parasite? It's fine. Dog's fine. No problems. No issues. So I wanted to ask you about this, and I can't even, the name is, I sent it to you, but what was the name of that parasite that they found in this particular fecal exam that I sent you?
It's called Sarcocystis, which is something that can be found in raw meat, which of course that's what got incriminated in this case. But I think the key thing is that the dog wasn't sick. You know, there was nothing going on. And I think the important thing to remember is just because we find something doesn't mean that it's a problem and that we need to, you know, put the dog on some medication or change the diet, or, you know, if the dog is doing fine and is asymptomatic, then we don't need to do anything. I don't actually check. I like to check stool samples on puppies, because puppies are more susceptible to parasites because their immune systems are developing, and, you know, it's stressful getting going in a new home and all this. So I do like to check stool samples on puppies just to make sure that we're getting them off to a good clean start in life. But for adult dogs, unless they, you know, are having a chronic diarrhea or some chronic issue, I don't routinely check stool samples on them.
And that would be because why?
Because if the dog is asymptomatic, then I'm not going to treat anyway. You know, I mean, if I find something, and the dog is completely healthy, I'm going to, and because my program, you know, to, you know, keeping pets healthy is supporting their immune system. The immune system can eliminate these organisms. And if it can't, then we're going to have symptoms. The dog's going to be sick. They're going to have diarrhea. They might be vomiting. They're not eating. They look bloaty. You know, they don't feel good. They're not thriving. And I see, you know, we get a lot of rescue dogs from other parts of the country. Texas is like the biggie lately. It seems like we're getting a ton of dogs from Texas. And so if those dogs are coming in and, you know, we have a persistent soft stool or they're just not thriving, yeah, I'll check stool samples on those because I want to see, because other parts of the country outside of Colorado, some parasites can be more prevalent, you know, in the warmer, more humid environments. So a lot of times, you know, I might check those dogs, but a pet dog here in Colorado, we've checked a, you know, stool sample as a puppy, the dog is healthy and thriving. I'm not going to worry about checking a stool sample every year.
Okay. So let me play devil's advocate. I'm the pet parent. I take my dog in, we get a stool sample. I'm feeding a raw diet. The vet comes back and says, I found this, say the name of it again.
Sarcocystis.
Okay. Sarco. Can I call it Sarco? I'm going to call it Sarco. Okay. They find the Sarco. And they say, this is from a raw meat diet. Don't feed your dog a raw meat diet. Now, if I am a pet parent that doesn't really push back, doesn't ask any questions, I probably would stop feeding raw. But if I am a pet parent that asks questions, I could still be scared in this respect that the vet has said to me, stop feeding raw because this particular parasite is in raw meat. And now my thinking is, all right, my dog's not showing symptoms right now, but if I continue to feed this, then my dog's going to get ill and I'm going to be responsible. How would you respond to that?
I would say continue watching the pet. I mean, yeah. Our pets can always get sick from something, but you know, if you're a good pet parent and you continue to monitor your pet, I guess the other thing I think about is, so if you were gonna, what are the drawbacks of changing the diet? So your dog's is doing fantastic, is on a raw diet, super healthy, and you're gonna take it off of the raw diet and give it what, kibble, something that's completely dead and toxic. Well, you're going to be doing so much damage to the dog's health by making that change, or, you know, and then put, you know, some kind of deworming medication on top of it just to be on the safe side. You are seriously damaging your dog's health. Whereas if you let the body kind of manage these findings and maybe continue to check a stool sample, you know, if that makes you feel better, because maybe it'll go away. Maybe it was just one, one batch of food or something, wherever it came from, is just one batch and the dog's just in the process of eliminating it. The dog's body could be doing what the body's meant to do. And the dog maybe ingested these cysts and it's passing them out. And the other thing too, is that parasites for the most part are very species specific. So the sarcocystis, if it normally lives, say, in muscle meat of you know, cattle, well, it's probably way more likely to be making the cattle sick, not the dogs. Most always, and there's a few exceptions, but most always, intestinal parasites are species specific, meaning dogs are going to get dangerous parasites from eating other dog poop, not from eating the meat of a completely unrelated species. They usually just pass right on out. And that's probably what was happening in this case.
Well, and here's the other thing. You and I both looked at the information that the pet parent had received from the vet. And my issue with it is that it doesn't give any type of levels. Actually, I think it did say that it wasn't over the level. Right. There was some information there that said there was no over the levels. But the issue that I always have with these type of tests is, what's a benchmark? Right. What is a overload of a certain parasite? Even if you find it, what is the benchmark that causes sickness? Now, maybe it's, well, it varies via pet. But how do we know that it's an issue if we don't have any type of levels, right? So that's my first question to you. How does a vet actually come back with some information and say, this is dangerous or it's not dangerous?
Well, and as far as actually quantifying it, like knowing how much is really tough to do on a fecal sample, because when you check a stool sample, so say you've taken some fecal material to your veterinarian, when we're looking at a sample under the microscope, we're taking maybe like a half a teaspoon of that or something, and put it in a solution that can kind of separate out, any parasite eggs that might be in there. You're still only looking at a very small portion. So being able to know how many parasites are actually in the pet is almost impossible. Like, unless it's extreme, like you check that small sample and it's just loaded. So you're like, okay, well, I just checked this tiny amount and it's loaded with this particular parasite egg. Then I think you could say that pet probably has a really high level of that particular organism. But if you just see one or two, you have no way. You really have no way of knowing. And that's where I go back to looking at the pet. Is the pet sick? On the fecal test that I like to do on puppies that I send out to the lab, they do an antigen test. So they look for the actual parasite eggs, but then they actually do an antigen test, which looks for like a particular protein from the parasite. So that can indicate exposure. So again, if I get a positive antigen, it's very common to see a positive antigen to Giardia because it's out there in the environment. A lot of dogs get exposed. If I see a positive Giardia antigen and the puppy's asymptomatic or the dog, I'm not going to treat it. I'm going to support the immune system and work on creating a healthy microbiome through diet and all the things I normally do. And if that dog or puppy remains asymptomatic, I'm not going to treat it. But I know there was an exposure. So if we do end up with symptoms, and well, maybe that is an issue. So it really comes down to looking at the pet, because all pets have different abilities to eliminate, these parasites. And a pet with a healthy immune system and healthy microbiome, in a lot of cases, is going to be able to just kick the parasites out, and they're not going to be a problem.
So do this for me. Would you explain to our pet parents the definition of just, something that you find versus that it's pathogenic, right? So if you hear pathogenic from your vet, people get very scared, but when maybe they don't understand it. Can you have parasites that are just there? They are not pathogenic, not going to cause a problem.
Pathogenic means that it is capable of causing disease in that individual. So these would be, again, like species-specific parasites. If we look in a dog stool sample and we see, parasite eggs that are commonly found in dogs, we know that the dog is the what we call the definitive host. So parasites have a definitive host. They have the host that the parasite thrives in. So dogs are a definitive host for heartworm. If a cat gets exposed to heartworm, they might get like one or two heartworms growing. They've actually found heartworms in sometimes on autopsies on people, but they don't cause disease. The body just eliminates them because it's not the or in usually like in system. They find them kind of encysted in the lungs and in people, but they're not causing any problem. In dogs, I mean, heartworm disease can really cause a big problem because it's the definitive host. So you need, I think, really good, clear identification of what the organism is. I've worked in some rural areas where a lot of my clients had horses and cattle. And you do a stool sample, check a stool sample on a dog, you might find parasite eggs that are from horses or cattle because dogs are out there eating their poop and they're out there sniffing around on the ground. But so you have to be careful to know that, be really clear on your identification and know that the dog is not the definitive host for that particular species of parasite. And so like with the sarcocystis, that you're referring to, I was hoping that they would have, that the lab would have had more of a confirmation from a parasitologist that would actually look at and say, okay, this is the organism. This is where it's most likely from. And it is or is not likely to cause disease in dogs, because a parasitologist can identify that. So actually, if that was my dog's poop, I mean, and I didn't have that information, I'd want that information. Yeah, I'd send it to the lab, or you can send samples up to like CSU and have a parasitologist look at it and say, I'd like to know what exactly this organism is, and is it likely to cause disease in dogs? Because a parasitologist can give you that information. And that's how you would know. I mean, that's kind of the next step. Like, yeah, it's there. Are you going to completely disrupt your dog's health by changing the diet, maybe giving it unnecessary medications, you know, without knowing it exactly what it is? I wouldn't suggest that. That would probably be, I guess, my recommendation as a next step is make sure we have that information. I think it's just so easy for people to get scared and they stop at the fear point and then they do this knee-jerk reaction and change the diet. And then that ends up being way worse for the dog in the long run.
Let me ask you a question about the sarco. Would a diatomaceous earth be helpful in removing that parasite? I do know that diatomaceous earth can help in removing parasites. What about this particular one?
I think in this case, probably not, because diatomaceous earth primarily works by the parasite ingesting it. It's like a silica. It's real sharp. Like the little pieces of it are real sharp. So if the parasite ingests it, like it's a worm or something. I've actually had people use it for fleas. They put it on the outside, you know, in the dog's coat, and the fleas eat it, and the fleas die because it like cuts up their inside. So I think it would actually have to be ingested to be helpful.
You mean the diatomaceous earth?
The diatomaceous earth needs to be ingested by the parasite to kill the parasite.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So if you have a customer, a patient that comes in, you find this in the fecal, you're going to say, don't worry about it unless we start seeing issues with the dog. And at that point, what would you do if you start seeing issues with the dog? Would you do several fecals, you know, a week apart to see if these parasites are growing? What would be your next steps?
Well, I think initially I'd give the pet parent the choice, say, look, we can find out more about what this is. Make sure we're having a parasitologist, you know, look at it, because I don't know my, you know, parasites well enough to be able to do, like, there's very subtle differences in, like, so this is sarcocystis. There could be 50 species of it out there. It would be really important to get that identification. So one step would be to just get that positive ID right from the get-go. The other option would be to see how the pet does. If the pet has symptoms, then I would probably be, checking again for it and see. But then I would still, if the same thing kept showing up, then I probably would still end up getting that, you know, positive ID on it to find out exactly what it is. And is that the problem? Because, you know, there's a big difference between two things showing up at the same time and direct cause and effect. Right. So just because this cyst keeps showing up in this dog's stool and the dog has diarrhea, is the diarrhea because of this, you know, because of the cyst, you know, we would need to determine that. And that's where the positive ID, I think, is really important. Because again, if the dog is not the definitive host for this organism, that organism is not going to be likely to cause disease in the dog. And I think when, you know, like in conventional medicine, where the raw feeding gets blamed, you know, we see this so many times, the dog has diarrhea, it's on raw food, got to be the raw food. Then they don't investigate what else could be going on. And I think it's you know, easy to overlook things if you just stop at one thing. Again, it's a correlation. It doesn't mean that the food is causing the diarrhea just because the two things are happening at the same time. You have to look at all the other options. And I think, you know, that is what happens a lot in medicine. We see something, dog has, you know, and this dog isn't even sick. We see something and then we just stop there. We don't, you know, investigate, is it actually likely that this is causing a problem for the dog? And if not, then we need to be looking further because we could be missing another condition that's going on with the dog and not treating it. And with a healthy dog, then we end up treating them unnecessarily. You know, I see that too. Well, let's just put them on a, you know, dewormer just to be on the safe side. You know, that's the great, you know, tagline. Well, just to be on the safe side. Well, anytime you give your pet any kind of pesticide, you know, you're disrupting the microbiome and you could potentially be negatively impacting that pet's health going forward and for absolutely no reason.
First of all, you have to know what it's really showing. Is it pathogenic? Can it cause disease? Or is this just something that is naturally occurring in the dog for that time? I do want to also say this, Dr. Jasek, that many raw feeders also hunt. Okay. They're also hunting in wild game. And most raw feeders, okay, most credible raw companies, their meat is USDA. Okay. So that meat is going to be inspected. If muscle meat is filled with cyst, trust me, that is not going to get through. Okay. So can it get through? Possibly. Can it be that the dog ate fecal matter or ate something else out in the yard that had this cyst in it? Yes, absolutely. And can it be in wild game? Yes, absolutely. So let's get more information from our test, from our vets, and from our companies before we decide that we're going to do something substandard for our dogs. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely.
Cool. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to the Raw Dog Food Truth. If you have any questions that you would like for us to answer right here on the podcast, you can contact me through my contact page. Dr. Judy Jasek is available to work with you throughout the country. You can do a Zoom call. You can send your vet information over to her. She does book out quickly and extensively. So get your information over to her. That is ahavet.com. That is Animal Healing Arts Vet.com. Is that right? Animal Healing Arts?
ahavet.com. Yeah, that's right. I had to think about it. Like, what's my website? Because I don't say it.
You know? Right. All right, everybody. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week right here on the Raw Dog Food Truth.
Oh, snap.
Find out how you can start your dog on the road to health and longevity. Go to rawdogfoodandcompany.com, where friends don't let friends feed kibble, and where your pet's health is our business. Just snap.